News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807 on your Thursday morning. And a good heavy long, 251-343-0106. You want to give a call, that's fine. Also, that is our text line, which has been pretty active this morning.
It has been, and quite a bit of conversation on the solar ranch meeting from last night, the solar farm from Silicon Ranch, as they took questions, a little bit of protesting, and we can get into that. We've had some text on it, plus the Iran fragile ceasefire. We've been seeing some texts on that, and we can get into as well. And Rob Holbert will join us just after 8:30 to talk about a lot of that local news, too.
So you had the Masters day one today, but yesterday was the par three, and it's all the holes were par three. And
which is how I like it.
No kidding. That's pretty cool.
Actually, I like bombing it more often now. I like getting out with the driver, but the Masters is not about me, Dan. Continue.
So... yesterday it was about Frankie.
Yeah.
And so Tommy Fleetwood from England, pretty well-known golfer. He's had a really good career. Hasn't won any majors, I don't believe.
And remember, for the longest time, he was like the best golfer to not win.
Yeah.
And he had some close ones and finally pulled it off, I believe, last season.
Got a big win. Just a victory on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, I need to pull that up.
Now, so he doesn't have any majors, but he's well-liked, and he's a really good golfer. And he had... So the par three is kind of a family affair, and you bring the kids along and all that. And I don't know how many golfers have actually got kids on the course at that time, but a few do. And Frankie, I think the fewer the better, actually, because then you're down to just several children. You're not all mixed up on who's got what and where. So Frankie, last year, Frankie was 7 years old, Frankie Fleetwood. And he gave a shot at one of the – which hole was it?
So that's the ninth hole. And Ike's Pond, which is one of the many historic, I guess, call them landmarks there on Augusta's property.
That's when you're trying to get it over to get it on the green, right?
Right, yeah. And so last year he gave it a go.
When, at age seven.
7 years old. No one really knew who Frankie Fleetwood was. But he's so darn charming in an Englishman sort of way, a young English child, and he's humble, clearly, even though his dad is so good at golf. But after falling short last year, he set the storyline himself. He said, next year I'm going to come back, and I'm going to clear this pond. I'm going to get it over. And so
he made that statement last year.
He was the storyline yesterday, and maybe adding a lot more pressure onto himself as the crowd were hoping and cheering for him to get over that pond.
Yeah, I don't have the audio of them cheering Frankie, 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 but that would probably, you're 8 years old, it might unnerve you a little bit.
Yeah, I'm hitting a duck hook after that.
Anyway, here is Frankie's shot on nine. Here the crowds are disappointed as it ended up a few feet short and splashed in. We're trying to get on the green. Not quite.
Yeah, he gave it a couple goes, came short. Really cute, too. Shane Lowry had his daughter out there, and she, after the second one fell short, gave him a hug and was patting him on the back.
Yeah, she's like 10. He's like 8. But funny.
Yeah, the best part are the interviews when they get the on-course interview with Frankie Fleetwood.
And so you have dad Tommy Fleetwood is there. Forgot that right, Tommy?
Yeah.
And then, so the interviewer is interviewing the two of them, and we'll pick that up right here.
What's it been like watching him try so hard for a goal?
He was happy with his shots, and he was so close as well. So, another year, right, Frank?
Yeah. It's going to be a long one.
Why, Ian?
When we get back here, I'll see if I can do it.
It's going to be a long one.
He was so sad. He kept hanging his head down. He's like, oh, I thought I'd get it.
I know. He really was a sad little kid after he didn't accomplish his goal. He said, it's going to be another next year, huh, Frank? Going to be a long one.
And how about the host out there who was interviewing him? She said, what do you think about all these people cheering for you? And he said, I think it's great, but I'd like I don't know their names, but I'd like to thank all of them.
So you had this massive crowd out there, and Frankie was thanking them and said, yes, it was so nice of them to cheer, but I don't know their names.
It's
like, we don't expect you to know all their names, but they're really cute little part of the Masters. Now it's off and running the actual tournament itself.
Yeah, it is cool, though, seeing all those families out there and, you know, taking your mind off, too, of everything that's going on around the world with this Iran ceasefire hopefully holding. You know, one more thing quickly, too, about the Masters. I saw a lot of diehard golf fans pretty upset with how they handled, even though it's the pre-tournament events, they had some celebrities out there yesterday like Kevin Hart, Jason Kelce. I think Pat McAfee was out there, Burt Kreischer, the comedian, and I think those three, McAfee, Kreischer, and Kelce, jumped into the pond out there at the Masters. You had Kevin Hart, who was like caddying for Bryson DeChambeau, and
yeah.
I think they're actually kind of pretty good friends, but people saying, like, what is the Masters becoming? They're worried it's becoming a version of the, what's the one out there in Arizona where everyone's cheering?
The Waste Management.
The Waste Management Open. They're worried the Masters might be becoming a little too much like that.
Well, they don't want that to happen for sure. And I'm surprised that anything got past the Masters officials without their signature on it to allow Kevin Hart or to allow people jumping in or whatever. Because if they don't like it, it's not going to happen next year.
Well,
I mean, they're really, really strict on anything that happens on that golf course.
They are. I mean, they wouldn't let Jason Day wear the bird outfit. He was going to wear birds, I guess, as part of one of his rounds. And they said, no, I've got to kind of keep it a little tighter than that.
They're also really tight on letting people in. You know, you have to enter with a badge. And evidently, if you wear the badge one day and you pass it along to somebody else, it can be all kinds of hubbub at the gate. And you're almost like a TSA investigation. They pull you to a back room. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
They're really, really strict on nearly everything that goes on out there.
Wow.
So, like, behind the scenes, everything is, it's as beautiful an event as it is, it's high intensity.
Mm-hmm. And Buddy points out, he said, Tommy also hit a hole-in-one yesterday. Yeah, he hit a hole-in-one on four. There were four holes-in-one yesterday during that par three contest.
I would have loved to see when Tommy hit the hole-in-one. I'll have to find that video. And Frankie's reaction to his daddy's hole-in-one.
Yeah, it must have been gold.
Yes.
Meanwhile, our top story this morning, as it has been here for several weeks now, is the latest in Iran. And a fragile ceasefire still ongoing. Although different reports from different media ever since that ceasefire technically began Tuesday night. And the president saying in a late-night Truth Social post that U.S. forces will remain in place until a full agreement is reached with Iran. He said if a deal is not reached, which in his words was, quote, highly unlikely, then the shooting starts.
Yeah.
That's what the president had to say last night.
Back and forth with the rhetoric. Here is a vice president. What role is Vance going to play in these talks now?
Well, he's been more than rumored. Trump said he was going to be involved alongside Witkoff and Kushner in these talks, which I guess we'll pick up again tomorrow in Islamabad.
Okay.
At least in-person talks. I'm sure there's a lot of negotiations going on right now. But Trump also said he was worried about Vance's security. Being the vice president, there's certain places he wouldn't want him to go for any negotiations.
Interesting. This is Vance on a little short overview of everything from yesterday.
The deal is a ceasefire, a negotiation. That's what we give. And what they give is the straits are going to be reopened. If we don't see that happening, the president is not going to abide by our terms if the Iranians are not abiding by their terms.
And the straits have not been wide open.
No, not actually. They've still mostly been closed, according to the reports that I've seen. A really interesting report last night from OSINT Defender. That's that X, that Twitter account I tell you about all the time.
Yes.
And they usually reference other reports that went to media, but kind of compile it all together. They were saying, and if I could find it here, so a couple posts from yesterday. They said in the last 24 hours, this was 8 hours ago this was posted, in the last 24 hours since the start of the two-week-long ceasefire, not a single oil or natural gas tanker has transited the Strait of Hormuz, with a total of four bulk cargo vessels transiting the strait Wednesday, the lowest number of daily crossings so far in April. That's according to data provided to the New York Times by a global ship tracking firm. Although, I don't know if you saw that story a few days back about a Wall Street company or a financial I'm not really, I guess it'd be a financial firm that tells folks where to put their money or not put their money. They actually sent almost an undercover agent out there to Iran or maybe the other side of the strait to see what's really going on and in person. And his report coming back was that there were actually more ships that were making it through than being reported. And those ships under the watchful eye of the Iranians. I know in your report, said that I think 12 ships were able to transit the strait yesterday.
Yeah, and it's basically the same number as earlier in the week. So no big change, even though this truce has been announced. And, of course, then Iran started like a toll on some of these, which was not part of the deal. Again, for a ceasefire deal, a good portion of the deal doesn't seem to be working really
right,
well.
The strait. And so the part that I was saying was interesting, this report said Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, has published a statement announcing alternative routes for commercial vessels traveling through the Strait of Hormuz in order to avoid sea mines deployed during the war with Israel and the United States. Quote, all ships intending to transit the Strait of Hormuz are hereby notified that in order to comply with the principles of maritime safety and to be protected from possible collisions with sea mines, they should take alternative routes for traffic in the Strait of Hormuz. That's the statement from the IRGC. And then they provided instructions for an alternative entry and exit route for ships transiting the strait. So according to that statement, they did place mines, and those mines are still out there. But it doesn't seem like they're letting very many people through.
Yeah, there's people that don't want to go through because of their minds. So you got all, you know, you got to come on through. Even if that's what they were saying, you have a lot of people that are not lurching ahead because they're like, no, we need greater assurance that everything's all right.
But on the other side, the Iranians say that the U.S. and Israel aren't upholding their end of this ceasefire bargain because of the war continuing in Lebanon.
Yep.
And you have Iran's president, Pezeshkian, who is kind of what, I guess we can call him a Pino, president in name only, you know, like the rhino thing, Pino for president in name only. So he, along with the parliament speaker, the one that they actually say the Trump administration has been working with, Mohammed Bagar Ghalibaf, they said that they see Lebanon as part of that ceasefire agreement that was reached between Iran and Washington.
And it's a big gap. I mean, they're saying, hey, that's part of it. America, I guess the U.S. is saying, no, it's not. Well, then do you really have an agreement? I mean, you have these points of contention that are huge, the strait, the war in Lebanon. They're not little talking points.
No, they're like two of the biggest.
Yes.
And it's really Israel who is the staunchest in saying that Lebanon, we're still rolling. And I think, what was the number they gave? 182 killed?
Yeah, something like that.
182 or 184 killed yesterday.
A lot of Michael on the text line providing, I guess you would say, evidence that civilians being killed among those. And that's certainly a high concern for all of us right now.
Yeah.
All this is going on.
And Paul, so he was pointing out on the text line earlier, Paul, in his opinion, he said, I've read major resources are headed to the theater right now. A major hit is being situated, and said, I think by April 12, everything will be in place. So is this ceasefire, I don't know, yet another bluff? I mean, we can't get into predicting what are bluffs and what aren't at this point with how the rhetoric goes with Trump. But I don't know. Are we just, you know, buying a little bit more time to get an operation a little more ready? If Lindsey Graham has his way, it certainly sounds like that's what we'll do. That we'll continue.
A ceasefire is like a cuss word to Lindsey Graham. That's,
he was just starting to have a little fun.
Yeah, exactly.
With this war.
Yeah.
He said there are troubling aspects to the ceasefire deal. Of course, Graham has long supported going after the Iranian regime. He said a diplomatic solution is the preferred outcome, but he is not sold on the ceasefire deal that was brokered. On X yesterday, Graham posted, the supposed negotiating document, in my view, has some troubling aspects, but time will tell. He's also calling on the vice president, along with other administration officials, to explain the deal to Congress. Quote, I look forward to the architects of this proposal, the VP and others, coming before Congress and explaining how a negotiated deal meets our national security objectives in Iran.
Yeah, more and more Republicans are saying, look, like it's time to get Congress involved right now. So we'll see if that happens. Also, the voice I'd like to hear from this morning would be anybody that was at the Silicon Ranch public hearing or forum last night in Bay Minette. If you were actually there, what did you think? Text line, or if you want to give a call, 251-343-0106.
Looked pretty well attended, and some residents, some community members really letting their voices be heard. But it sounds like Silicon Ranch was answering questions.
They were.
The CEO there. We'll get to that.
Well into the night after 9 p.m.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 826, almost 827. Big Silicon Ranch public forum last night, because they held it themselves at the Bay Minette Civic Center. 180 people or so were there, and I think they answered questions well into the night, like began at 6 and might have wrapped up. It was after 9. Hal Sherrick was still on the case out there in front of the building. He said about 50 people remained in there, so they did what they said they were going to do in terms of informationally.
I checked out some of the live stream. Erica Thomas was streaming it with 1819 News. It seemed like the interactions between the public and the representative of Silicon Ranch were cordial at the very least.
Yeah. Well, Reagan Farr is that man, co-founder, and here's part of what he had to say.
We have a commitment. We have a signed contract for Alabama Power. We are committed to delivering electrons to them at that point of interconnection. You know, we're working on beginning construction on the interconnection infrastructure that's going to be built. We're very confident that the legislature is not going to enact the moratorium. And we feel confident that once we can share the attributes of this project, that the community is going to be supportive as we move forward.
So maybe they can move that dial a little bit in their favor before all is said and done, but it almost sounds like they're committed to it. Well, that's what he's saying. They're committed. They're moving forward.
I don't know where they stand, though, in the process of actually buying that land. He was saying they have a deal with Alabama Power, but I don't know. It looks like the bill...
He's got a signed contract.
But with Alabama Power or to actually own the land?
I got you.
Talking about there was the energy credits, I guess.
Okay.
But the legislature had this bill before them for a one-year solar moratorium.
Right.
Which, after amendments, it ended up just pertaining to Mobile and Baldwin County. But it doesn't look like that has the juice to make it through here in this last day of the legislative session. So that's a win for Silicon Ranch. Then you have this zoning vote that's expected to come for the people of Stockton. But if you heard our reporting on that yesterday, if they follow the process the right way, Silicon Ranch that is, and get their stuff done before that actual vote, then they'll be grandfathered in anyway and will be allowed to put that project up on that land. So I'm not sure exactly where things stand now or how the people of Stockton feel after that meeting yesterday, but I know that Megan Fowler and the other protesters that don't want to see this, they were pushing back last night and will likely continue to do so.
Yeah, if some hearts or minds were swayed, it wasn't those.
Right. Text on our text line, this texter, and this is funny. I was thinking the same thing. Said, sounds like the people of Stockton need to put a few beach mice, gopher turtles, and endangered plants where that solar plant is going. Yeah, you throw some beach mice out there, they'll have to stop everything immediately. Jason says, do we think that D.R. Horton or 68 Ventures fully support the Stop Solar movement? Seems if successful, it sure would lower the demand and possible buyers for the land, allowing them to step in. Yeah, I'm not sure if that 4,500-acre tract of land, if that's appetizing to some of those.
Turn up your voice on the text line, 251-343-0106. Now, back to Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. On the text line, a good bit of reaction to nearly everything this morning. What was going on up in Stockton yesterday, Bay Minette, actually. Frankie Fleetwood getting some love on the text line as well this morning. I think no matter where he goes, he's going to get the love. Also, this is an interesting text from Michael concerning the Israeli attacks in Lebanon. He says, I'm not trying to be... He sent me a picture of a pair of
school girls,
who were evidently killed. You know, you got these attacks in Beirut, in residential areas. He said, I'm not trying to be overdramatic, but I know people right here in Mobile whose family was under attack yesterday by Israel. There are students at local schools whose aunts and uncles and cousins were hiding from Israel's attacks, and U.S. provided bombs dropped from U.S. provided jets. And apparently now sanctioned by the president, he said they're not terrorists. They are Catholics whose family have been in Lebanon for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's Michael's trying to put a face on the people that are being affected by what's going on in Lebanon right now. And I know we have many, many, many Lebanese Americans living in and around the Mobile area.
Yeah, and Michael has been outspoken on this for the entire time, really. If you want to give your take, 251-343-0106. Joining us, as he does every Thursday, is Rob Holbert from Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. I'm hoping we have a good connection here. Rob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are y'all this morning?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Yeah, plenty to get to with you today. And I guess we could start with what we, Dan and I, were talking about some of that last segment. And Silicon Ranch, who to this point have really only been part of the solar farm debate from afar. They showed up in town last night, Bay Minette, that is, to meet the people and talk with some of the folks who have questions or even issues with this solar farm project. Meanwhile, you know, since this was uncovered by Lanyap weeks ago, it's gone to the state legislature. You have the Baldwin County Commission, who's talking about zoning and holding a referendum for the people there in Stockton. And you have now also with your reporting that the firm that was hired by the commission to, I guess, look at that land and see if it was fine for Silicon Ranch to build there. Once you guys uncovered their ties to Shell Oil Company and Shell's ties to Silicon Ranch, that has now been done away with. So I guess they're looking for a new company to prospect that land, I guess, Rob. So a lot's gone on here in these last few weeks.
Yeah, it is. And I you know, I only recently realized that Silicon Ranch is not a salad dressing. So, I mean, that's been...
Yeah,
really hidden, learned some things.
Hidden
learned
Valley.
Some things in the last few weeks. Yeah, I mean, you know, this thing it continues to be obviously a hot button issue, and I know there was a decent turnout last night for them when they showed up to talk a little bit. I don't know that they really won anybody over though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like that'd be a tough road to hoe from what we've heard people say these last few weeks. But you know, a lot of folks, especially on our text line, who don't seem as fired up about this as a lot of the people in Stockton and the surrounding areas over there.
They're almost contrarian to all of it, right?
They bring up the private property rights, which has been mentioned a ton here, but also they say, you know, what's worse, that or D.R. Horton putting in some big new subdivision? That's kind of the
I get that as well. And you know, I think there's you know, as we also pointed out in this another story we did, you know, a lot of the property rights stuff is being driven by, you know, a public relations firm that's pretending to be a, you know, grassroots organization.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of weird stuff going on underneath. But you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think the big issue is the, you know, it's the way it was done, I think, is the bigger issue. You know, there was announced a big data center coming to Pritchard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that story. And, yeah, big.
You know, and people are saying, oh, you know, hey, great, welcome. So, you know, I think a lot of it is locational and, you know, where are you? And you think, well, we don't want this out here. I mean, I'm not anti-solar farm. I know some people are very anti-solar. I don't know that that's necessarily the biggest issue. Here is really the big issue is how did it come about? Why weren't people told about it to begin with? It sort of kind of came through back channels, and I think that's a big part of it.
I agree. I mean, I think that was the biggest the back channel, the backdoor way of introducing it all, almost trying to get everything in place, and that included members of the PSC and also Alabama Power.
Sure.
They were all in
sure.
on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think, you know, the other part, we really have to figure out what we want in terms of data centers. You know, do we want these data centers coming here? I mean, they use tremendous amounts of energy. How are we going to handle that you know, from our standpoint, from the consumer standpoint, how much of that is going to hurt our personal bills, which are already the highest in the Southeast?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that a potential for that to happen? I mean, it's when you they use a lot of electricity, and they're bringing them in left and right, and so I think that's part of all of this.
Yeah,
and, you know, I think they need to have a better. We really need an overall plan, I think, for this.
I mean, I agree 100% with that. Almost like a federally driven plan, and states have their own too. Because not to take it to too macro of a level, but in a way, you know, these data centers and having more sources of energy like solar in order to prop up the tech industry because of AI, it's yeah. going to become or already is a national security issue. So it's kind yeah. of it's well, a local issue, but it's also like, well, to compete or to win this tech race, we need to have data centers and solar as much renewable energy as we can.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you can look at it and say, okay, we have the ability to produce X amount of electricity in Alabama, and we then need to look at it and say, how much is going to be, you know, how much of this are we going to allow, and how are we going to power it? How is that going to work without it affecting the consumers who, you know, the home consumer?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I think that's the big part of it. And it doesn't seem, you know, it just seems like it's being done very hodgepodge,
yep.
Willy-nilly, any other old adjectives you might want to use, but it is just kind of happening piecemeal to say, well, we're going to have one here, and we're going to put this here, and we're going to have, you know, we'll have write-offs on the electrical usage and that kind of stuff, and it's like, the average person's like, I don't know what this means.
Exactly.
How they're shifting. The electricity's being made here, but you're using electricity over here, and it's credits.
Yeah.
It gets really confusing, and I think that really somebody at the top, somebody at the state level needs to say, we can only have this amount, or we've got to be able to produce this much more electricity to make it worthwhile.
How did you feel the legislature handled this? I mean, it came to their plate pretty quickly, but it was a really weird way that this legislation almost made it through. It doesn't sound like they're going to have time to put that 1 year solar moratorium on, but the way it turned out this week after amendments was that it would just apply to Mobile and Baldwin counties after a lot of the rest of the state said, hey, we're good with the projects that we have going on right now. So maybe you guys need to settle that on your own down there. I just kind of thought, like so many things, it was a really ham-handed way of going about it.
Yeah. Super reactionary. It's not, you know, it's a political solution to make the people happy who are upset about it, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's a great idea for us to be excluded from the concept of this type of growth. If it's handled, it just needs to be handled properly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we have to look at it and say, can you do what is needed to have these things here? If you want data centers, if you want that kind of stuff in your community, there has to be a way to fuel it. And so I think that's the big thing. It is very reactionary. It is ham-handed, as usual. It's just like, charge up there. Let's slap something together to look good. And, fortunately, it looks like it's not going to be.
Hey, on the text line, we've got a texter said, I believe I heard to the news yesterday that a new data center is in the plans. It's going to be in the Africatown area if it's going to happen. And you're right, Rob, that doesn't seem to be as much controversy. He's talking about the data center as opposed to the solar farm. Those are two different things that work together. They're not one and the same.
Well, you need the solar farms to provide electricity for the data center.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Just clearing
they're
that up.
He wants electricity sucks. They're huge electricity sucks. I mean,
yeah.
That's
yeah.
It.
At least in the mock-ups of that Pritchard data center, they have some solar panels on the roof. So I don't know. That wouldn't be enough to cover it, but
three or four of those things, they got to take care of.
That's right. Talking with Rob Holbert with Lanyap and some other really good reporting, too, for what was a big week for the city. They, you know, talked about the new naming rights sponsor of the arena, Regions, and we don't know what Regions paid, though, to be the sponsor, and that has some people, I guess, up in arms. They'd like to know, you know, what Regions is actually paying to slap their name on the side of that building. All we've been told is they kind of doubled OVG's asking price.
Yeah, I mean, as a nosy journalist, yeah, we want to know. I mean, it's the first question we asked, mm-hmm. but it's, you know, I get that they're it is technically sort of a private industry to private industry thing, I think they ought to just tell everybody instead of playing this game, because people want to know. But I mean, the money sort of it goes to Oakview to help run it. So I mean, I think that they're the ones selling it.
Yeah,
together.
You're right. It's private. It's private to private.
Not to mention it.
It's private to private, but it's not. Yeah, but I would say this, Rob. If you have a problem, you need a sponsor. You need $15 million. Let's say. Got to have it. Okay. Yeah. A company comes along and he says, we'll give it to you, or we'll give you a little extra. Okay. But we don't want the number out there. For whatever reason they have, I don't know what it is, but if Regions had, they're gonna solve your problem, a $20 million problem.
Take the money and run.
I mean, I don't know.
I think that from what I gather, that's really kind of where it went. You know, it's sort of like, hey, we don't really want this out there. So, it, my guess is it'll get out there, and it's just sort of, you know, I think also there's probably just some sort of effort to not have that be the big part of the story.
Yeah.
You know, I think it will be. I mean, if you said, okay, they paid $20 million for the naming rights, let's just put a number out there. I don't know if that's even a remotely reasonable number.
It's reasonable.
If you said that's what they paid for it, that's the focus. And, you know, a lot of people clearly, I mean, just looking at the comments, a lot of people don't understand at all what this is. You know, I mean, people are just like, I can't believe that they're giving away this free advertising. I mean, just all sorts of, all over the place. You know, it's just nuts. The overwhelming negativity, of course, I mean, you know, it's social media, so it's, of course, overwhelmingly negative. But, I was, like, kind of dumbfounded. Like, what did people expect? Yeah, you know, what were they hoping would happen? That it would be named after their favorite band, or I don't know what. You know, it's like, it's a corporate sponsorship. It's going to have a corporate name.
Yeah.
It's not going to be exciting. It's going to be the Poulan Weed Eater Arena. It's going to be whatever. It's not, you know, it's not going to be, I don't know what level of excitement people wanted.
Yeah, well, look, our comparisons to New Orleans would go on forever and ever, but at least it's not named Smoothie King, okay? So we didn't knock it into the water.
There are worse things, you know. Yeah. It doesn't give me any heartburn. I mean, I'm glad they have a naming, a partner.
Yeah.
And it will change over time.
No.
You know, when this agreement's over, somebody will buy another one, you know, and that's where it is. And it's not, you know, it's a nice new arena in a mid-sized city, American city, where it's good to have a naming partner. But
I agree.
You know, gets them some money. But,
yeah.
And, but I mean, it's not going to change anything.
And as we kind of head towards the end of the interview here, I know we don't have a lot of time on it. I do want people to read what Scott Johnson had to write about the Mobile Airport Authority. And combining the last two airport directors, what's being paid out in severance, and it's well over $500,000. It's just kind of strange, isn't it, that you have, you know, Curry leaving under the circumstances he did, which more came out on that through Lanyap in the trip to China not that long ago. But then for Andy Wilson to leave, which sounds like it was due to health issues, I mean, that is odd to have that much paid out after they're done working, right?
Yeah, it's a lot, and I don't, you know, I mean, it certainly happens, I guess, in high-profile jobs, but, you know, it's a tremendous amount, and, of course, there's NDAs and all sorts of stuff that are signed that, and, you know, non-disparagement, and you kind of like, well, if this is just somebody just leaving of their own volition, is all that necessary? Most of us would say, you know, that doesn't sound very normal, but then again, you know, the thing that kind of made me really take a, you know, stop for a second is, like, they were paying him over $400,000, paying Curry over $400,000. I was like, wow, that's a heck of a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was making not anywhere near that at his previous position over, I think, in Tallahassee. But, you know, it's, they just had some things going on over there, and, you know, and I will say this on their part, though, they have been super transparent. I mean, when we ask for a document, they give it to us. They've been like really amazing in that regard. So, I mean, I don't feel like they're just trying to hide all this stuff. They've been, yeah, you want this? Here it is. You know, so it's been, that part's good, I think.
By the way, back to the arena, Paul says at least it's not the Preparation H arena. I think he's...
that. I mean, again...
Could
again,
be worse.
Could be worse.
Yeah. Rob, appreciate your time. I know the Nappy nomination period has closed. We'll have the finalists, I'm sure, named here in the next few weeks. But if people want to find out about that early, they need to be subscribers to Lanyap Online.
That's right, because it will come out early. Go to Lanyap Mobile, get signed up. 30 cents a day, folks. Putting news out all day long.
All right, Rob, we'll talk again in a week, okay?
Take care. All right, bye.
Rob Holbert, Lanyap, and online, lanyapmobile.com. We'll come back and wrap things up, let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show, and get to your final text all on the way on Mobile Mornings.
Jeff's got two of the gentlemen running for Tommy Tuberville's Senate seat on his show today.
And one who's not.
And one who's not, for sure. One who's... He's had better political days behind him, I guess. So you have Attorney General Steve Marshall. He's going to be on at a little after 9:30. The one you're mentioning is former U.S. Representative Parker Griffith. Always a good time. And U.S. Representative Barry Moore. Of course, he's a U.S. congressman looking to win that primary, which more than likely is going to be a runoff, I guess. Barry Moore is going to be in the about 11:35 with Jeff Poor today.
Yeah, and April Marie will sit in for Jeff in that final hour.
Ah, so okay.
Looking forward to that. Going to the text line, Joel says, can someone to save the life of me, I think you mean for the life of me, can someone for the life of me explain to me or tell me why Iran is so pissed off with America for the last 50 years? What did we do to them? I don't get it. There's a long and sordid history there, but basically when the radical Muslims took over there in Iran after the fall of the Shah, that's when you saw basically radical Muslim governance begin to pop up, not only throughout the Middle East, but also in places like, what was it, Thailand, I guess, saw some of that too. So,
yep.
And then
they started the trend, kind
of. It's become, a religious war for them over that amount of time.
Yeah, if they never got into power, we wouldn't know any of this pain. We wouldn't know, we wouldn't have this incredible animosity against us. It wouldn't be proliferated and amplified by the fact that they are the regime. They're in charge.
Yeah, and an actor that you just can't predict their next move, because I was reading something the other day about how the mutually assured destruction way of thinking about nuclear bombs applies for most sane people in most sane countries. But then when you're dealing with people that are in charge, like in Iran, it's not really a thing you can bank on, because you know, what they would like to see happen is far different from what the rest of the world would like to see.
You've heard this phrase forever: Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon, period. Every president, everybody has said that forever.
And, you know, the whole tech part of these new modern wars, like what we've seen in Ukraine and Russia, but especially since the U.S. went into Venezuela and then now the war in Iran, and we've seen what Israel was able to pull off. I don't know if the CIA and the U.S. military are just using these as opportunities to spread propaganda and maybe a little more fear into the hearts of our enemies. But have you seen them talk about this ghost murmur tool that they said they used to rescue that downed weapon systems officer in Iran?
Not familiar with it.
They said it detects heartbeats at great distances. Trump said nobody even knows what it is. Nobody ever heard of it before. And the surprise extended to the academic community, experts saying it would be a massive scientific leap in harnessing nitrogen vacancy center diamonds to measure magnetic fields. This is all above my head. But what they basically said was they could scope out this officer's heartbeat from very, very far away. And that's how they were able to figure out exactly where he was in that mountain crevice.
And then, that's how they're able to individually identify people and then target them.
That's what
kill
the
them.
Claim they were making was. The CIA director, John Ratcliffe, alluded to that during his briefing earlier this week.
Well, you know, isn't that lovely? I mean, if we have it on our side and they don't have it on theirs, it's good.
Yeah.
8:59 and Jeff Poor is next.